Shkoach to Aaron told that on his Dvar Torah. I shkoach to all those who are making Siyum tonight. Who's not making a Siyum tonight? Daniel Davis. Where's Daniel Davis? Not here? Oh! Shkoach to Daniel Davis. What Mishach do you finish it today?
You are the, I think, the 10th person to open out tonight, and I can tell everyone I'm not doing a Siyum tonight.
Yet. Yet, the night is still young. This is the night where, as you can see, this is the night where the Shana Aleph guys have decided to take control. They're driving the Shana Bet guys out of Yeshiva. Good riddance. Take over. Take over. Man is fully stocked behind his ears, and he's ready to take control. In any case, so this week, Parshas Tazria overlaps with Parshat HaChodesh. We read about the beginning of the process of the Geula. The beginning of the process of the Geula. And of course, what's so striking about the Geula from Mitzrayim is that you read through Parshiot Ve'era, most of Bo, God's doing, you know, he's doing what he's doing. Right? God's a powerful guy. And he's rocking Mitzrayim. Wonder, how the headlines would be in today's world for such a thing. What was going on there? And it comes time for Makas Bechoros. But before Makas Bechoros, we have the Parsha of Choshes Elohim. Comes first, and it's what the Jewish people needed to do, what we need to do. And of course, as we spoke about on Shabbat, each parsha interfaces different years with different haftorot. This past week was Parsha Shmini and Parsha Parah, and this week is Parsha Tazria and Parsha Chodesh. And as we prepare for Rosh Chodesh, and we stay up to prepare properly, on the one hand to conclude Zman Chorif properly, on the other hand to prepare for Rosh Chodesh Nisan properly, we should be reflecting how does Parsha Tazria interface with Parsha Chodesh. And the truth is that Parsha Tazria begins a series of parshiot, of prakim, that are about things that don't seem too glorious. Tumah. Of course, the Tumah of a Mitzorah. But in Parshas Tazria, the Tumah that begins with omissions, right? Yoledes, Zav, Zava, Nida, all these men, women have some kind of omission, and doesn't seem like the kind of stuff you want to talk about. This very famous Medrash, very beautiful, strong statement later on in Parshat Mitzor, which means you can use it for next week, which means it has value. It has a long shelf life. It says in Perek Tesvav, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe ve'al Aaron lemar, Dabru el bnei Yisrael v'yamartem aleihem. Ish ish kiyezav mibsaro zovo tamehu. What's Dabru el bnei Yisrael v'yamartem aleihem? It should say Dabru el bnei Yisrael lemar. I mean, that's what it says all the time. Dabru el bnei Yisrael v'yamartem aleihem. Medrash says that people might think this isn't the kind of stuff you want to talk about. Who wants to give it to our Torah and Zav Zava Nidio Ledis? Oh, Zav Zava. Sickly emissions. Dabru el b'nei Yisrael v'yamartem aleihem, says the Medrash, this is dafka what you should talk about. And then Tziv explains that naturally you understand why we'd have a hesitance about speaking about these things, but it's important to speak about because of what it relates to. And that's what I want to understand. What's so important about these types of tumma that two parshios. Zav, Zava, sick. Maybe you want to mention one half a pasuk that it's tummy. I would say that, Parshas Tazria, tough parsha to give a Dvar Torah. And that's how people traditionally explain why it starts with Yoledes. Okay, so we have some nice stuff in the beginning. Yoledes, say Vertloch. 95% of the Divrei Torah in Parshas Tazria are about Yoledes. And so I recommend that this Shabbos, wherever you are, take a look at the Parsha sheets, count 10 Divrei Torah, tell me if nine and a half of them are about your lettuce. How many of them are about Zov? Zava. So, okay. But the Parsha does begin that way, and obviously if it begins that way, it's because that's what we're supposed to begin with. And the name of the Parsha itself is very significant and surprising. Daber el b'nei Yisrael le'mor, Isha ki tazriach, v'yalda zachar, v'tamash yivat yamim ki meni dat v'otat itma. Before we talk about the halacha, which is that when a woman gives birth to a boy, she's tamei for 7 days, a girl tamei for 14 days, and the interesting parallel drawn by the pasuk between birth and nida, she's tamei the amount of days she'd be tamei as a nida, which is surprising. Interestingly, the Torah hasn't yet mentioned the halachas of nida. Nida is only mentioned the end of Mitzora. The way we're introduced to nida is through Yoledes. Yoledes, when she gives birth to a male, female, 14 days, is tamei the amount of days she would have been tamei through nida. But that's not what the Parsha is called. It's not called Yoledes or Yolda. Parsha's Yolda. That would be good stuff. You could all talk about Parsha's Yolda and Yoledes. The person had a baby that week. It could be Stark. Be good stuff. If you didn't have a baby, everyone would say the Vort. Nobody's talking about this Parsha because it's called Tazria. And Tazria means to ovulate. That's the name of the Parsha? Ovulation? Come on. Let's be serious. When I was a kid, there was a commercial for, I think it was called Sunkist, orange soda. It was based on the Beach Boys. There was a group called the Beach Boys. Yeah, I know, it's hard to imagine. There was a beach group called the Beach Boys. I guess they were a Thursday group. In any case, the way the song went was, the famous one, cool, 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 cool vibrations. So I remember the first time, you know, when you read in Hebrew in the parasha and you realize it's called ovulation. I was thinking, cool, 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 ovulation. I don't understand. Like, that's the name of the parasha, ovulation? The male birth, I understand. Ovulation? That's the name of the parasha? Come on. Can anyone come up with a stranger name from a parsha? Ovulation. Okay, you say Tazria, it sounds from. Tazria, Zroyim. That's what this parsha is called. And it's the Torah's fault. Da'aber b'nei Yisrael neymar, Isha ki yolda zachar. That's what it should say. A woman gives birth, who cares about the ovulation? Okay, she had ovulation. Said the Mistama, you know, birds and the bees, and that's how it works, and there's a canal. I'm saying that. If the Torah is emphasizing ki tazria, it's because that's part of what we need to know. And because the Torah emphasizes it, we emphasize it as the name of the parsha. And then, you know, maybe again, to give us some room for Divrei Torah, I said 95% are about Yoledes, the other 5% are about Mila. You know, Zav and Zava. It says, Daber b'nei Yisrael le'mar ishiya ki tazria v'yalda zachar v'tamash shivat yamim ki mei nidat v'otat itma uvayom hashmini yimol b'sar aloto. And on the eighth day, we do the bris milah. Why is it stopped in here? No bris milah reference intended. Right? Why? We're talking about tumas yoledes. We're talking about tumas yoledes. A woman gives birth, she's tummy. That fits in on some level because the tumah is like yoledes, and so the tumah is like nida. But why do we mention the bris milah? If you continue with Pasuk Dalet, after it says Shivat Yamim, Betoma Shivat Yamim Kimeini Dat Votatitma, Pasuk Dalet, Ushloshim Yom Ushloshit Yamim Teshei Bidmei Tara V'Chokorizot V'Yim Nekevat Yilei. It's about Tumah V'Tara. Why, before continuing the discussion of Tumah, do we mention that after she's Tameh for 7 days, the Bris Milah is on the eighth day? In fact, it even seems that there's a connection between the Bris Milah on the eighth day and the Tumah for 7 days. It almost seems like a progression. She's Tameh for 7 days. You do the Bris Milah on the eighth day, and then she's Tameh for 33 days. What's the connection? And it's not just that the Torah mentions Milah here. It's important for us to realize the significance of mentioning Milah here. If you look in the Rambam, you look in the Poskim, this is how we know it's a mitzvah. Meaning Avram is told in Parshat Lech Lech Bris Milah and told that his children should follow it. But the mitzvah status for us is that we're mitzvah here. And that's why we've shown them, they talk about the mitzvah, they say Avram was commanded, but our mitzvah comes from the fact that it's mentioned here. This, of all places, is the place where we're going to choose to mention the mitzvah of Bris Milah. Really? A woman who ovulates and gives birth is tamei for 7 days, and on the 8th day there's a Bris Milah. You know, people who are keeping track of the Torah, which is a good thing because it's the Torah, right? You know what I'm saying? If you're keeping track. Last week's Parsha, Vayi Beyom HaShemini. And this week's Parsha begins with the Yom HaShemini, which is at least noteworthy. And I've never seen a Dvar Torah on that, but there should be, right? And it doesn't end here. We have Shemini in the next round of Parshios, where it talks about an animal, you're not allowed to bring a carbon, an animal born within its first 7 days, only Yom HaShemini, V'Hala, Yeretzah, etc., which is, you know, just interesting that we find all these Yom HaShminis. But here, two Parshios in a row. V'Yom HaShemini Yimol B'Sar Olato. And of course, there's a shift from Pasuk Bet to Pasuk Gimel. Because in Pasuk Bet, we're talking about Yoledet. In Pasuk Bet, we seem to be already moving from the woman to the husband, to the father. Because it says in Pasuk Bet, Isha ki tazriya v'yolda. And at least in ancient times, it was women who gave birth. I mention that to you because in our, you know, wonderful world of trying to confuse everybody, Mitzvah Hashem, they'll figure out one day a way that men can give birth too, because it's only fair. I'm saying, you know, why should men not be able to give birth? You know what I'm saying? It's, you know. There's a new thing in Eretz Yisrael that, you know, they started off initially that women, when they give birth, they have, what's it called? Chufshat Leidah.
Maternity
leave. Okay. So, you know, it's very hard for the women. They give birth, right? You know, a big thing goes through a small thing, and it hurts, and it's painful, and, you know. So the men said, you know, we also work very hard. So now men have a little maternity leave. So it used to be that men could have like a couple days in Sachakol. Now they want to change the rule that men have the same right to have the same amount of time. Which is a great deal. You don't have to give birth. And you have maternity leave. I'm into that. My wife will kill me, but I'm saying, you know, that's into equal opportunity. Right? So men deserve to give birth too. Because it's not fair that we don't get to feel that relationship with our children. And we know that it's written somewhere in the Torah, which is the only way to explain why we take it so seriously, that men and women have to be the same. And we will give birth also. Yirtzeh Hashem. It'll probably have to be a cesarean, but, you know, we can do it. We can give birth. So the Torah, at least, talks about a woman giving birth. It was very ancient and traditional. You know, Paul Ted Cruz. The Torah is Ted Cruz. Isha ki tazriya v'yolda. Isha! I don't stamp. It's chutzpah, you know, it's unfair. Isha ki tazriya, it's a chiddush. Isha ki tazriya. But Pasuk Gimel says, V'yom hashmini yimol b'sar olato. Yimol b'sar olato. And of course, all this is the introduction to a parsha. It talks about all this tumah. It starts off with Yoledes, as I mentioned. Then it shifts right away to Mitzorah. And only after a lengthy discussion of Mitzorah do we get back to Zav and Zava and Nida. And that's very interesting too. Because I would have thunk that if you had all these tumas, Yoledes should be with Zav, Zava, and Nida, because they're all about emissions. And as I mentioned, Yoledes is built off the model of Nida. So we should finish all the emissions and then talk about Mitzorah. Torah doesn't work that way. Starts Yoledes. Then it talks about Mitzorah, great length, and then it comes back to the thing similar to Yoledes. And obviously the question is, when people make a big mistake, you know, people who don't know Tazria Mitzorah that well, Stama, all of us, you know what I'm saying? It's like black hole of emissions stuff. So, you know, if I ask you, you know, what's the difference between Tazria and Mitzorah? Which parsha is Tzara'as in? So if you didn't ever look it over, you would say Mitzorah. But that's incorrect. It's in Mitzorah too, but it's in Tazria also. Tazria is full of Tzara'as. What's the difference between what type of Tzara'as we talk about in Tazria versus Mitzorah? Anyone? That's somewhat correct. But we also talk about the body in Mitzorah too. You are right that the house is only spoken about in Mitzorah. So that's correct. But body is also a Mitzorah. The difference regarding the body is Tazria speaks about how someone becomes a Mitzorah, and Mitzorah talks about what happens once they're a Mitzorah. It's interesting that this is divided into two parshios. And I think the reason why is because there's a lesson to be learned from how you become a mitzvah, and a different lesson to be learned for how you stop being a mitzvah. But that's a separate point. Okay, so what does all this mean? What are we supposed to understand Parshas Tazria as? So the first question I think we need to ask in order to answer this is how this fits into the flow of Sefer Vayikra. And we saw last week, we talked about it at Sudash Nishit, that the perek right before, the last perek in Shemini, is inextricably connected. Is about what? Last perek? Perek Yudalev, what? Tumah v'Tahara by animals. Tumah v'Tahara by animals. That's the perek right before. We finish that, and now we shift. And we're talking here about Tumah v'Tahara by people. And the question is, how are we supposed to view the relationship between these things? What's the relationship between Tarkim that come one right after the other? The Tumah v'Tahara that's generated, or the Tumah, by what we consume, versus the Tumah that's generated by what we exhume. What comes out of us as opposed to what goes into us. Both these things are described as Tumah. But those who know, just the Pashup shot in the Psukim, there's a different verb used to describe relating to these in Yonim of Tumah v'Tahara. The end of Parsha Shmini, Torah says, Zo Torata Beima Ve'o V'chol Nefesh HaChayav Aro Meses, etc., Lehavdil bein hatame uvein hatar uvein achaya nechel uvein achaya shalotech. Lehavdil. Parshio Tazria Mitzora, the Torah uses a different verb. The end of Perek Yudalid, the Torah has a very similar summary. Zo is Torah sam Torah sam Mitzora. And it says, Zo ta Torah lechol nega tzarat lanat tzarat abegat v'labay, the different types. Lehorot biyom hatame uviyom hatar. It's not just distinguishing. There's a creative psak involved here. Why? What does all this mean? Rashi, beginning of the parasha, quoting Chazal, really summarizes it like he does, every parasha, especially in the beginning. The relationship and understanding what's new here. And what's interesting is that Rashi comments on Isha Ki Tazria. He's not up to any of the dinim of Tumah yet. But he's already commenting. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemor, daber al bnei Yisrael lemor, isha ki tazria, omer Rabbi Simloi, kishem sheyitzirato shel adam, achar kol behema chaya v'of b'maseh bereshit, kach torato nitparsha achar torat behema chaya v'of. A simple, descriptive statement. In the creation of the world, the creation of man is described after that of Behema Chayavov. Kach Torato Nidparsha Achar Torat Behema Chayavov. What's interesting is the usage of the word Torah here. Because I would have thought we should use the word Tum'ah. Tum'ato. Nitparsha achar tumat behema chayavof. No, right? The word Torah. And the truth is, the Torah uses the word Torah. Zot Torata behema, and it's summarized by the Tumah Zot Torata yoledet, and Zot Torata mitzora. We're talking about the Torah of behema chayavof, the Torah of Adam. Yitzirato shel Adam achar kol behema chayavof b'maseh bereshit. Now here I think there's another interesting point that I'd like to make, and this will bring us around to what I want to talk about, what I think the parashia is trying to introduce to us. The creation of man is described after the creation of Behema Chayavov. Okay, so why should the Torah of Adam, what's the connection between the Torah of Adam and the Yetzirah of Adam? So man is described as being created last. Okay, Yeshkoich. So what? Why should that mean that the Torah comes next? I might say, okay, it's the same order. Is there a deeper connection? You guys tell me. Is there a deeper connection between the Torah of Adam here and the story of creation? What's the connection? Or is it just you know, we have Behemah Chayva Ofa Adam, and it's the order there, so it's the order here. I think here lies the whole point. We're not just talking about the Dine Tumah V'Tahara of Adam. At Haraya, we're talking about Tazria. We're talking about Bris Milah. We're not just talking about the Tumah V'Tahara. And that's why Rashi's comment is not on the psukim that come later that talk about Tumah V'Tahara. And he doesn't use the word Tumah V'Tahara. It's Toraso Shel Adam versus Toras Behemah Chayav Ov. We're not talking just about the Tumah. The Tumah is part of it, but it's not the whole story. We're talking about something very similar to the mashal, to the model that Rashi's referencing, which is Perek Aleph of Sefer Bereishis. It's something very similar because here too we're talking about new Teyit, creation of man. Kishem sheyitzirato shel Adam. Translate those words, yitzirato shel Adam. What? Yeah, what does that mean, creation of man? Translate that. What are the two ways you can translate the creation of man? The creation of man by God, or the creation of man of what he can create, or in other words, that man can be like God. Now you might say, well, any amoeba can be like God, it can create another amoeba. But it's much greater to create a human being than it is to create an amoeba. Kishem sheyitzirato shel adam achar kol behemah chayav ha'of. B'maase bereshit. He has to explain which yitzir he's referring to. Kach torato nitbar shachri. This idea is presented by Chazal in the very beginning when we talk about the first human being created by another human being. Back in Parshat Bereshit. Back in Parshat Bereshit. It says, Zeh Sefer Tolas Adam, after it talks about the prehistory of the world, starts over. Mark's wrong. Zeh Sefer Todot Adam. Biyom Biro Elokim Adam, Bidmut Elokim Asauto. It starts about how God created man in the image of God. Vayechi Adam Shloshim Umeat Shana, Vayoled Bidmuto Kitzalmo. Says Chazal, this is the greatness of man that he too can create in the image of God, which is the image of man. That's the greatness of human beings. I mentioned earlier to the Shanabet today, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tzelem. How beloved, how special human beings are that they're created in the image of God. Who created more human beings in the image of God? God or man? Well, God only did it once, twice, three times if you're Christian. Men have been doing it ever since. If we appreciate it. And the gap, the transition from Shmini to Tazria on the simple level is for us to understand the difference and the implications of the difference. Animals generate Tumah only through their death and consumption by human beings in a way that damages who they are because of what they're eating in a nutritional perspective. Human beings generate Tumah through how they live, through whether they live successfully or unsuccessfully, through, yes, what may sound dirty when it's taken out of context, through their sexual involvement. A human being can create another human being, b'dmut Elokim, or it can be wasted, or it can turn sickly in the form of a zav and a zava. And there's significance to the process that naturally goes on within a human being. The process of ovulation, which is what gives the potential for life before a human being does anything. There's something natural going on within a woman, preparing her for life before and without her deciding anything. Whether she chooses it or not, she's an automatic generating baby machine. Don't tell the Democrats. But it's true. A woman is constantly reloading for babies. Without her making up her mind, without her choosing it. Of course, there's a choice too. Because unless you're Christian, baby ain't going to be born unless something else takes place. And that interaction is the interaction between man and God that goes on for human beings in such a special way. Isha ki tazria v'yolda zachar. Now, a person can look at this and say, it's the same thing like an animal. Animals also have their process, and the egg and the sexuality, it's the same thing, no? That's what the Torah is coming to relate to. And that's the danger of Disney movies, as we know. As we've spoken about many times, right? I don't have to repeat it, right?
Chazon is always good.
What? How many people know what I'm talking about, Disney movies? Raise your hand if you don't. Yoni, you know the problem with Disney movies? You went to this yeshiva almost 2 years. And you're going to leave without knowing the problem with Disney movies. How you talking? You might show your children Disney movies. Rachman and Litzlan lo aleinu. Oy vavoy. Many years ago, before I became responsible for the program at Yeshivat HaKotel, a very chashuva rav in one of the very chashuva yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael decided that it might help his yeshiva if I came to be a rebbe there. Okay. So he started a whole process. He asked me to meet with the Rosh Yeshiva of this chashuva yeshiva, and I did it. And at some point that rav, I think he got cold feet. I don't know what it was, whatever. He got cold feet. So now he had started this whole process. He had to find some way to pull it back. So he told the Rosh Yeshiva, we can't have Mr. Rebbe in our yeshiva. He has a television in his house. We have a television screen in our house which we used to allow our children to watch Disney movies on. I know all this because the Rosh Yeshiva asked me, I heard you have a television house. What's pshat? I said, did you ever hear of Disney? I think I said, my kids watch Disney movies. I didn't realize that it was apikorsis yet, etc. You know, Baruch Hashem, I was saved by the television, because who knew what would have happened, right? In any case, once upon a time, many years ago, a boy came to ask me, he heard in his yeshiva that Moshava and Bnei Akiva are kfira. He wanted to know if they were kfira. Okay, it's kfira. So I said, you know, you mean because they don't have gemilas chasodim? Torah, avoda, and you wonder why we're selfish. Now the truth is, it's just very long. Torah, avoda. So chesed didn't make the cut. Chesed, Torah, and avoda. Okay, the case could be made. I said, look, you could say a lot of things about Bnei Akiva and Moshe, but which one of the Yud Gimli Karim do they violate? Which one? I said, if you want to talk about Kfira, you'd be talking about Disney movies. The kid was totally, didn't know what to do with himself. You know? So I didn't explain it to him, but I'll explain it to you. Disney movies, the ones they make now. Panda, Karate Guy 3. What? Kung Fu Panda. It shows you how desperate we are. What?
DreamWorks, not Disney.
You say Moitzi Latz. It's Moitzi Shemra. It's a Lashon Hara. But Disney is the one who started it. They were Choyti Omachtias Arabim. It goes back to the bear.
Winnie.
No, well, before there was this Jungle.
Jungle Book.
Jungle Book. Right, yeah. Right, the bear necessities, the simple bear necessities, right? You know what I'm saying? So they were choyti umachti. You know what I'm saying, right? And, you know, the point is this. Let's portray animals as having the emotions that we know human beings have. It's a befairish under the sea that starfish have identity crisis, and, you know, mermaids become teenagers and rebel against their fathers, And if you see Beauty and the Beast, the plate has a, you know, an affinity for the spoon, and you know they build a relationship slowly. You know, they're not Haredisha plates. You know what I'm saying? Slowly, and the clock and the baker are friendly, and you know what I'm saying? Everybody's Hamish. You know what I'm saying? Right? It's the same thing like human beings. The same thing like human beings, and we're all you know anthropomorphic. Now, what's the implication of that? If you take it seriously, it means we all, you know, there's no Zos Torah Behema versus Isha Ki Tazria. It's not coincidental that this culture is part of a world that's blurring the lines between animals and human beings, where caring for animals is part of a world where people don't feel bad if they live their lives like animals. Animals are programmed for two things. Well, one thing, survival and perpetuation of their species. Or in other words, fuel and sex. Kesef and beer, right? As opposed to shtar. I was told B'chiddish today about the Haredish rapper who called himself shtar, and they asked him, why do you call yourself shtar? He goes, because most rappers sing about kesef and beer. And I don't. So shtar, what a great part. We should start the shtar organization of, you know, to be a superstar. You know what I'm saying? I'm just like, you know, we should all be superstar. And then we should, you know, what a vart. In any case, animals are programmed for kesef and beer. And human beings have those animalistic instincts. Just go down to the Chadar Ochel, you'll see it. Except on fish day. Here it comes out. Fish. Everybody's relaxed. Nobody's in a rush. The Shenebeck guys are happy that we timed it correctly. You understand what I'm trying to say? The only day fish day is good is when there's a camp bringing pizza. And that doesn't happen coincidentally. I tell in advance, when I know there's a camp bringing pizza, I tell the dining room, that's fish day. So the crazy fish people can double header. And the human beings can have lunch. To each their own. To each their own. I'm not being mezalzel. You know, people eat fish. You know, gefilte fish is a good fish. You know what I'm saying? Right? Yeah, stuff, you know. What can you do? Right? You know, when we talk about animals, the only nafkamina is the fuel that they provide us with. When we talk about human beings, we're talking about the great potential they have to create B'Tselem Elokim. The loss of that potential is mourned through the Tumah of Nida. The generation of that potential and the separation of that living being from us is also mourned. The separation from the life that we have inside ourselves. And the Milah is part of the process of the progression of days. Because only after the appreciation of the life that's been generated, through the Yemei Tumah to commemorate the separation from that life, can we take this next step. The next step, which is the most human, godly step. That's the root of what Judaism symbolizes and what makes it an oat. Beini uveinecho. Now Shabbos is an oat, beini uveinecho, because God rested and we rest. I understand that. Tefillin is an oat because the tefillin talks about our relationship with God. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, etc. And Maran Brach says that God wears tefillin, the notion, does God have a bris milah? I don't think so. But when we take action to complete the creation in a physical way by changing the aver that makes the creation possible, when the man takes action on another man to complete the process that will allow him to create with a woman, that's when the process of what makes human beings special and different is completed. And that is, of course, the famous Medrash about Rabbi Akiva and Tornus Rufus that I quote very often, where Tonus Rufus says, you know, whose creations are greater, God's or man's? And Rabbi Akiva says, man's. And Tonus Rufus says, what about the sky? You can't make the sky. He goes, we'll talk about, you know, something we can relate to. And Rabbi Akiva then goes on the offense. And he goes, you know, Tonus Rufus says, why do you have a bris milah? Because I knew that's what you were asking. That's why I gave the answer. Rabbi Akiva says, what's better, cookies or wheat? And again, up till the age of macrobiotics, most people would say, cookies or wheat? Cookies! And you're supposed to say cookies! When I open up the cupboard in my house, and my wife is an anxious child, she's busy answering questions in Shabbat Kotel, we never have food. We have to, you know, do B'dikas Chametz to find some cookies in the back. And so I open up, and you know, it used to be like when I was a kid at home, you opened up the cupboard, it was all food. Now it's all materials. Uncooked barley, you know, some saying, powders. This should not be in the cupboard. The cupboard should be cookies, pretzels, potato chips, and the kids know when Ima went shopping, when Abba went shopping. When Ima goes shopping, she comes back with materials. When Abba comes shopping, he comes back with Cheetos. And whatever else looked good. Oreo cookies. Good stuff. Go straight to the snacks lane. My wife says, pick up vegetables. Pick up vegetables. I need none of that stuff. Stark! So when I open up the cupboard and I see the barley and the wheat and stuff, I'm like, where's the cookies? And instead I'm saying, what about the cookies and wheat? Cookies is the word. Who wants wheat? That's why, you know, my father-in-law, first year, he asked me if we could pick up some shmura matzah. Because usually my brother-in-law, he's frim, so he picks up the shmura matzah. So I was asked to pick up the shmura matzah. So I found an ad, I called the guy up. I said, I see it's with whole wheat. You have any regular matzah? I want a whole wheat matzah. He says, Rabbi, you know, all hand shmur matzah is with whole wheat. I'm like, That's healthy, right? Whole wheat. Whole wheat. What a regular stuff. So I first gave a whole explanation. You shoot the wheat with the water. It makes the whole thing. I just said, whole wheat? I'm going to eat whole wheat matzah. So be aware. The round matzahs are whole wheat. So if you have a thing against hooty-tootiness, just know that if you eat the round ones, you're buckling. You're giving in. Derek Herschel said, all matzahs with whole wheat. Looks white to me. You know what I'm saying? My dad watched, it looks white to me. I don't see no whole wheat there, right? Anyway, so cookies or whole wheat matzah? I'm talking about real cookies. I'm not talking about the potato starch cookies. Zeklau Gadol on Pesach. The more it looks like food you eat during the regular year, the more you want to stay away from that on Pesach. Because it's not what you eat the regular year. If you're eating a potato, that's okay. If you're having pizza, it's not pizza. You understand? It's, you don't want to know what it is. It's, stay away. Pesach cookies are not cookies. It's Pesach chemicals. It's all from potatoes. And I want you to know, this is one of the terrible things that happened to the Masorah of the Jewish people. I'm talking about Masorah. When I was a young warthog, and you went to a hotel for Pesach, they had the regular desserts, and then there was a little area that said non-gebrachas. So the normal Jews could have matzah meal cake, which actually had cake. I'm saying today the cake is all cream, right? You're looking for the little part of cake, there's no little part of cake. It's all cream. In the old days, you had matzah meal cake. It was edible. So what happened? 5-10% of the population that's very vocal, that actually asked the question. Because when I call up hotel, I don't say, do you serve gebrachas? Because I want real food. I don't ask them that. I just say, oh, it's kosher, fine. But the non-gebrachts people call up and say, is it gebrachts? So if you're a hotel manager, you figure, I'll just, the whole world has become non-gebrachts. You can't find real food anymore. All because of those evil chassidim. And it shows you how a small interest group can make us all suffer. With cream. After Pesach, I don't want to see any more cream. I want flour, cookies, pretzels, pizza. The good stuff. What are we talking about? Oh, yes, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said, what's better, wheat or cookies? And the answer is, Rabbi Isai, cookies. Well said. It wasn't loud enough, but you get the point. And Rabbi Akiva said, you want to know what my proof is that we're supposed to do the Bris Milah? We cut the umbilical cord. You don't need to be Jewish to know that human beings need to complete the process of birth. Not horses. Human beings are the only creatures in the world born in a way that if someone doesn't cut the umbilical cord, the mother and the baby die. Not that way by horses, because they don't have scissors. Could you imagine? A horse, someone had to cut the umbilical cord. What would we do? They don't have any scissors. I'm saying there'd be no more horses. Right? There'd be bad news. Why is it that human beings are created with that need? It's a reminder, it's a sign you're different. And here comes the shaila. Human beings are different. Are they better or worse? The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Chet, in the context of a person who testifies against someone else as being a rotzeach, the Mishnah that says that we warn the Edom the seriousness of what they're talking about. They should understand that they're testifying against a human being and the significance of what it means to be a human being. And the Gemara there says, why is it that human beings were created last? Which is what Rashi's building off of. Tana Rabban, Adam Nivra be'erev Shabbos. He was born right before Shabbos at the end of creation. With Neima, first explanation, Shelo Yehu Haminim Omrim Shutav Hayolah HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Masa Bereshis. If men had been around from the beginning, they would have thought maybe they were involved in the creation. Fine. Davar Acher, Shim Tazuach Da'at O'alav, that if a person gets too haughty about himself, and human beings are created in a way that they could become haughty about themselves, Omer lo, say to him, Yatush kad mecha, a mosquito was created before you. Or in other words, the fact that a human being was created last should give us reason to pause and realize that we're not so chashuv. Mosquitoes were created before us. And mosquitoes, as we know, are very powerful creatures. I don't like mosquitoes. Who here likes mosquitoes? Probably the same people like wheat. They're creatures. I don't like no mosquitoes. And you see them. When you see them, it's too late. And when you see a mosquito, you know that you're not going to get just bit once. A bee bites you once, he has his day in court and he's done. He loses his ding-dong and he's finished. The mosquito just keeps on pecking. And you know if a mosquito got into your pants, you see what I'm trying to say? It's going to be bad news for the Jews. But the mosquitoes in the end, besides the ability to bite, what are they? They're like not creatures, like a fly. It's got that little nose thing going. You know what I'm saying? Little fly at the end, they go like little thing, right? They got whole wings. Mosquitoes just like the biter thing. He's just a biter. There's nothing to him. Yutush kod mecha. But then the Gemara says, Davar acher, kedei sheyikaneis lemitzvah miyad. Why was man created Erev Shabbos? So he could immediately begin, you know, what he's doing in this world. Davar acher, kedei sheyikaneis lesuda miyad. So he could enter the Suda right away. Mashal Melech Basav Adam Shebana Palterin V'Shichlalan V'Hitkin Suda V'Achar Kachichnis Orchin. God prepares the world and then he brings in the guests. What you see here is two sides of a coin. And both are true and they are two sides of a coin. A human being can be less than a mosquito. And a human being can be Nezer Abriya. He can be the highest thing created. He can be Zoche to be God's invited guest to the Suda God prepares for him. Assuming he sees himself created as Kadesh Yikanes LaMitzvah. Man is given the abilities and the potential that no mosquitoes have. No animal becomes Tame after it gives birth, because no animal creates in the image of God. No animal has, or we have, no mitzvah to do any milah on an animal. But there's a mitzvah to do milah on human beings, because human beings are special and higher and better. And their process may look similar physically, but it's different. And understanding that is the beginning of understanding what we are as human beings as opposed to animals. And living our lives as human beings as opposed to living them like animals. As opposed to Walt Disney. And this is where it all begins. How do we see ourselves? And the best proof of God's existence, the best proof of our lives being meaningful, is the fact that we feel that they're meaningful. Is the fact that human beings, for some strange reason, are a creature, the only creature, that thinks its lives are supposed to be meaningful and has identity crises. Which is why it's so terrible to think that Rafiki the monkey is depressed over Simba. He's a monkey. Monkeys don't get depressed. If they don't have bananas, they get hungry. Human beings have identity crises. 7 billion people, everyone thinks his life is supposed to be meaningful. How do we explain that? How does the evolutionary process go from amoeba to identity crisis? And the answer is a nefesh, a neshama, a tzelem elokim, which before you understand anything about what that means, you need to recognize that it's there, the idach zil gmar. The rest is just parshanut. The rest is just filling in the pieces. That's where it all starts. That's why Tazria is so important. And that's why the mitzvah of Mila comes from here. Because the mitzvah of Mila is rooted in the premise, reinforces the premise, that we are different. And that the acher yitzirah of chaya behem of ov means that we have the potential for more, and therefore the danger of being less. Because a mosquito has no potential. And if it fails to bite enough people, its floor isn't very low. Human beings have a low floor and a high ceiling. And that's what Tuma on the one hand and Mila on the other hand are about. And it begins with Tazria. The fact that we are created with the inborn ability and therefore responsibility to create B'Tselem Elokim. Yetzirato shel Adam, Torato shel Adam. And this is why we're inextricably connected to Mitzora. We're inextricably connected to Mitzora. Mitzora is a shocking thing. The fact that we treat something that seems like a skin disease as a religious issue. If an animal has tzaraf, doesn't mean anything. A human being has tzaraf, it means a lot. And it's a kohen, not a doctor, who gets involved. And you wonder, why out of all the sins, and there's a lot of sins out there, out of all the sins, do we have a sin, or types of sins, lashon hara, gaiva, and the two are, of course, directly connected to each other, that have this kind of implication? I would think that a person who serves up on a zara should get a skin disease. A person who violates Shabbos should get a skin disease. Of all things, lashon hara, really? Chofetz Chaim was quoted as saying that he would tell people that there's more yisurim involved in saying lashon hara than eating chazer. But he's afraid people start eating chazer. What's the pshat? Why is lashon hara so many yisurim in lashon hara? I think the answer is very simple and very important and right along these lines. There are many sins that are terrible things. Terrible things. But lashon hara rooted in gaiva is where a person is giving expression to the worst side of man. Animals don't say lashon hara about each other, despite, again, what you see in Disney movies. Animals don't say lashon hara about each other. The only time animals have issues with each other is when their territory, their food, their needs. Okay, that's understandable. People have needs. Lashon hara is where we take the extra potential wisdom and understanding we have and use it. Use it for negativity. Use it to spawn negativity. We function as negative people. Gaiva is where it goes to our head and causes us to spin out of control, where the computer takes over itself. And the chiddush here is, for humans to see the way they're corrupting themselves, that it even expresses itself physically. You should be able to see how you're eating yourself out on the inside. The Rambam, in the end of Hilchos Tumah Tzaras, he talks about how even though human beings and animals seem to function the same way and they eat similar foods and da-da-da-da-da, it's not the same. We have a nefesh on a different level. And when the nefesh gets corrupted based on our unique potential, it gets expressed through Tzaras. And that's why Tzarat exists and is so important. For us to see how we can deteriorate ourselves, we can be less than a mosquito. Because a mosquito can't destroy itself. Only human beings can do that. Only human beings can corrupt themselves, can function this way or not function this way. And it's this great potential, this great ability, which naturally translates itself as responsibility, that HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem is introducing. Because a person following the process of the Nisim of Yetziat Mitzrayim could reach the conclusion that God is driving and our job is to sit in the back seat and maybe put a seatbelt on. And the point is, you're not leaving Egypt until you do something. Until you take control of your destiny. Until you make a bold statement about yourselves that the Egyptians aren't going to want to see. Until you take responsibility for yourselves and your own calendar and setting that calendar. It's an unbelievable thing that we determine when Pesach is going to be. We determine time. We determine it. Afilu shogi and afilu mezidin. HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rishon Hu Lochem L'Chodshei Hashana. This is when you begin. You begin when you take action. You begin when you see your ability and therefore your responsibility to take action. And this is maybe one of, if not the most important message you need to take away from yeshiva. It's in your hands. It's in your hands. And therefore it's your responsibility. Whether you get up in the morning, and whether you learn during the day, and whether you learn during Ben Hazmanim, and whether you act properly with your parents, and whether you carry yourself properly, all those things are in your hands. Not my hands, not God's hands, not even Rav Kotler's hands. And those are big hands. They're in your hands. At most, what we can do is help you understand what you need to do. Try to help inspire you to want to do it. And one of the boys I was talking to today said to me, you know, why don't we discipline? Why don't I intimidate people? You know, why don't we do this, why don't we do that? In the end, chinuch and growth is when a person realizes it's in my hands and I'm going to make it happen. Now, when I say it's in my hands, I don't mean that we don't have challenges. I don't mean that we don't have issues. I don't mean that we don't have difficult decisions. But we have to realize that we make those decisions. And it's easy for us to want to see ourselves as passive victims of circumstance. And there are circumstances. There's no one in the world born with a clean slate. Like the Gemara Nida says, we call today genetics. God picks up a tipa and he says, this tipa is going to be this tipa is going to be that. And this tipa's parents are going to have this issue, and these tipa's brothers are going to have this issue, and everyone has. You may just be aware of your issues and not other people's issues. And you may be more aware of your issues because you've succumbed to them and less aware of other people's issues because they've struggled against them. There's that famous story that Tosfos Yom Tov says, quotes a Medrash, we don't know exactly where it is, right? That the king, far-off king, heard about Moshe Rabbeinu, right? And he's a great person, I want to find out more. He sent his painter, go paint me a portrait of Moshe Rabbeinu. He painted a portrait, came back, he showed it to his... You know, people understood how to interpret pictures, and they looked at it and said, oh, this guy's a murderer and a rapist. I went back to Moshe Ben, I said, what's that? He goes, yes, I was created with those instincts. Who you see is a person who worked against those instincts. But we live in a world where not only do people want to justify themselves based upon whatever their situations are, they want to see themselves as mechuyev to realize that situation. If I come from a broken home, it's a mechuyev for me to be an abusive person. The one time they believe in God is when they want to see their circumstances as significant and as indicative of where they need to go. Everyone has circumstances. And no one has the ability to see perfectly. Some people have issues with getting up in the morning, and some people have issues with retention, and some people have issues with being able to stay attentive, and medicines. We all have it. Each one their own way. You may not know other people. You know your own. And no one can succeed perfectly. But what we do about it is in our hands, and when we stop recognizing that, we become programmed animals. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. V'haya Lachem L'Zikaron. V'haya HaDam Hazeh Lachem La'ot Alabatim. Because God doesn't need blood to see which home is the Jewish home. We need it. Because we need to see that we're a Jewish home and understand what that means. We need to understand that we wear tefillin and that gives us a strength. Being a human being, being a Jewish human being, gives people more potential, for good or for bad. And we see it and we know it. The worst people in the world are Jews. Or Trump. You know what I'm saying? Right? The worst people in the world are Jews or the people who hate Jews, who are inspired by something Jewish. And the greatest people in the world are Jews. Just realize that we don't have the option of being somewhere in between. And maybe you walk around sometimes and see Goyim. They live Goyish lives, a lot of them, you know. Hey there, Annie Joe. And they say, there it is. Why can't we be, you know, like that? We'll just merge in. We'll go to Walmart, you know what I'm saying? Go to the fireman's, you know, car wash. You know what I'm saying, right? Why can't Jews spend 5 hours at the fireman's car wash cooking hot dogs? Hey there, Annie Joe. Yeah, and that fireman's car wash. Let's go down to Walmart and have a sample. Goyim go to Walmart, they walk around the store a little bit. They come with a big cart with one box of jelly beans from the, you know, $1 bin and a video. Jews walk out of Walmart. You ever see a Jew walk out of Walmart with the Twizzlers? I'm not talking about a 16-year-old Jew, you know, they drop the bus dropped you off there, you gotta walk around a little bit, you gotta get something because you're at Walmart. I'm talking about the Eden. We go shopping there. We got 14 light fixtures. Especially the ladies, the women, Jewish ladies. You know what I'm saying? Oh boy. Oh boy. Credit card. Walmart. So my accountant said, look, maybe you have some hotzaot, some expenses from the summer we can put down. And I said, some? Let me show you something, man. Walmart sends me thank you cards after the year as a supporter. I have one of those aprons. Hello, my name is Victim. Yeah, I go to the director camp at the end of the summer. I said, just write the check straight to Walmart. You know, put me, I don't want to be the middleman. I'm going to get taxed. Just write Walmart. WALMART. Why can't Jews live a life like that? Just get lost in some Midwestern town somewhere. You know, just they can't. Even if you become secular, you have to be a commie. You have to be a socialist like Bernie. You know what I'm saying? With you? That's where we are. We're just, you know. And you appreciate that. And like I was saying before, there's nothing, nothing that gives me and other rabbeim as much nachas as seeing boys transcend the issues and challenges they have. Not do it perfectly. You can't, human being. But to fight against that and to want it enough and to care enough and to believe enough at every stage in your life. You believe you can be a mechanech? Go with it. Because if you don't believe in what you can be, you're living a life that's a default. You're living a life that's a little closer to being an animal. Because animals are programmed. Human beings take their own fate into their own hands. They do bris milah. And that's really Yom HaShmini. I heard Rav Dan spoke today about the famous Medrash about, you know, the difference between the eighth day of creation and the first day of creation is that on the first day God created light, and on the eighth day he taught man how to create light. The eighth day is when human beings take over. God, he programmed the first seven. The eighth day is when we bring the Shekhinah down. The eighth day is when we define ourselves. The eighth day is a great koteret if you want to use it. That's why the Torah does. Ours is the eighth day. If we believe that there can be an eighth day. It's not enough to know you're not a dog. You have to understand what it means not to be a dog. And the difference between a dog and a human being isn't just that dogs walk on four legs and humans walk on two. And that's the way science sees it. There was a moment where the gorilla stood up. May have been. We're not against the evolutionary notion. But the big moment was when God infused us with a soul. That's the moment. Because there are many people who walk on two legs who are not that human. Not that they don't have the potential to be. But they've decided not to realize it. Tarzan is a great story. Because it shows you that there is a way back. If we choose to mute ourselves. And what this Zman, what this year and years have been for you, is to highlight the fact that you are human beings. You are Jews. You are B'nai Torah. And being a B'nai Torah highlights all of those above, all of those things. It brings to the clearest expression this sense that I'm different. And I remember the thing that struck me most when I used to return from Yeshiva to Chutz La'aretz was to walk off the plane in New York and be greeted by Goyim. Hey there. And you see right away, it's not a Goy versus a Jew. It could have been a Jew for all I know, the security guard. But right away, to go from communicating on a high level about Torah, about mitzvah, about Avodas Hashem, by Yiras Shamayim, and suddenly, the transition is at that moment. The transition is when you're in the airport with all these people and all these cultures and all these, and you're asking yourself, Baruch HaLakenish, Baruch HaKodiv, Dilan V'Natov, V'Natan Torah Temet. The fall from a world of Torah Hashem, Yiras Shamayim, Avodas Hashem, to a world of human beings who are just a little less. Who are just a little less in how they live their lives and maybe the gifts they've been given. And the question of whether we appreciate that and want to protect our place and our place in life and whether we can believe it. Because our society, in the name of equality and being politically correct and racism, we erase those distinctions. You and Odell Beckham Jr., despite what he does with his hair and ears and what he does on the field like a chayra, you're the same. He's better than you because he's a good athlete, no? The king. LeBron is better than you because he's Balgaiva, because he can play basketball. And to drive around and listen to the fan and be Mekadeshem Shemayim of these people and again, who won and who lost and who won and who lost and who won and who lost and what's this one doing and what's this one going to do and what's that one going to do? What does it do with everything that you've built your lives on? And that's what yeshiva is about. It's not just I did a mitzvah and I did a this and I did a... It's the notion, and you all know it, of tapping into something deeper and better and higher. When you're going and when you're traveling and when you're coming, remember Yishuk Yitazria. That's the name of the parasha. We have embedded within us naturally the ability for more and the responsibility for more. There's a tumah that comes from your ledes. There's a responsibility of mila afterwards. And a human being has the ability to destroy himself from the inside if he lets his gaiva and his pettiness and his smallness get in the way. And the beautiful people in the world that you've been exposed to, the beauty, you know, someone like Rav Nevin Sala, someone like Rav Adari, Vichule, the grace comes from living life properly. The very famous drash of Chazal, beginning of Parshas Chayesara, that, you know, it says by Sarah that she was 7, 20, 100, doesn't just say 127, says she was the same way, as young as she was at 7, is the way she was at 127. What's pshat? She didn't get old. She looked like a 7-year-old girl. And I always say, you know, we use the term to get old gracefully. And you get old because the clock ticks. You don't get anything, you get old gracefully. There's some people, as they get older, you see on them the scars of life. There are two kinds of scars. there are physical scars. A person, a knife cut them. And then you see how a person's life expresses itself in who they are physically. And some people get old gracefully because they've lived a beautiful, fine life. That's what Sarah was. She was just as pretty despite the fact that she had lived 127 years and been through a tremendous amount. You see people, you see even physically. You don't have to be a spiritual person to see someone like that and see that, wow, they're different. And dafka, you know, when a person is 13, you're not going to see it yet because they've been living differently for a certain amount of time. If you take an 80-year-old Rav Nevinsel, he's older than 80, and an 80-year-old Chayra, and look at them together, you'll see right away. Ashreinu. And anyone who appreciates, and all of you appreciate, what it means to be part of a world like this, it comes with the responsibility to maintain it and want it. And what you should be doing over Pesach is appreciating all the more the great gift of Ehivdi Lanu Min HaTohim, the great gift of having something that puts you on a higher level, on a better level, a level of creator, a level of creator. The line between Tazria and Shmini. Human beings are not just about what they ingest. Human beings are about what they can do with that. We ingest organic molecules from animals, from wheat, from vegetables. We ingest organic molecules and turn them into human beings. You don't have to be a cannibal to create a human being. It's an unbelievable thing if you think about it. And of course, none of you in the room appreciate it because you don't have children. But to be able to understand that correctly, that's Parshas Tazria. And the interface with HaChodesh HaZalachem, Am Yisrael as a people begin when they're ready to take action, and those who couldn't take action didn't leave Egypt. Part of that liros es atzmo isn't just the passivity of having been taken out. It's the appreciation of having been nigal, of having become proactive, of having made choices, of having identified ourselves, of having understood that HaChodesh HaZalachem. And when we say Nikadesh Hashimcha Ba'olam like the Malachim said, what we're saying on a deeper level, what we're recognizing on a deeper level is that we have the ability and the responsibility to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. To be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. I was speaking to one of the guys earlier today, and there's a natural nervousness going back, and my parents, and they expect this, and they want this, and they want to see this, and they want to see that, and I want them to see me as they appreciate my growth. I want them to see that I'm in a better place. How are you going to show them? By the diukim you can make in Tosfos? And we both know, or at least I know, that the diukim you can make in Tosfos are part of what put you in a better place. But they're not be able to see that. How are they going to see that? They'll see it through your grace. They'll see it through your calm, through your goodness, through your positivity, through your lack of gaiva, through your stability, through your maturity. Do you have that? Are you a better person now in how you handle things? And how you can handle your sister? I don't have sisters, but I hear they're difficult. Are you going to be quicker to help your parents or slower? Are you going to make people around you feel better or worse? Are you going to come off condescending and negative? Or graceful and positive. Who have you become? Mekadesh Hashem Chabolam. And the point of what I'm saying is not perfect way to influence your parents. Best way to get your parents to like you. That's not why you want those things. It's because you want to be someone who the Rambam writes about in Hilchas Yisodei HaTorah. Who makes a Kiddush Hashem, which means that people look at you and say, I want my son to be a Ben Torah. And a Chilul Hashem is someone who looks at you and says, I don't want my son to be like that. He's flipped out. How many of us are going to cause more people to want for themselves and their children and their future what life is supposed to be about. How many of us live that? How many of us can people see that in? That's the madad. That's the check. Let's think about that before we leave. Let's think about that. How do we make sure that who we are, and we appreciate that. We know who we are. A person who learned Torah and grew spiritually knows who they are. They don't need to act a certain way for the world to see it. But the question is whether it's real enough that it spills over into how they act. Or if it's just a trip. I have to think about that. Not just because of what we carry as representatives of the world of Ovdei Hashem, but who we really want to be. Who we really want to be. What kind of lives we want to live. To what extent does it translate? Does who we are as Ovdei Hashem translate as who we are and as human beings? Because it definitely is supposed to. Nekadeve shet shimcha shimcha b'amolam k'shem shemakdishim ato b'shmei marav nekadeve shet shimcha shimcha myself, my feelings when I would go for Bein Hazmanim, it's good that I remember. That's already a chiddush, you know, right? So first of all, you know, there's a certain sadness. If a person's done well in yeshiva, there's a certain sadness. You're leaving, and even if you're coming back, you're leaving, you're sad. And I remember the sadness turning, you know, the tears or whatever, turning from tears of sadness to tears of joy. And there should be tears of joy. There should be tears of joy. For whatever you've accomplished, for whatever you now understand about yourself more, for whatever, you should be very happy. And sometimes it takes having to walk away to appreciate what you have. And sometimes it takes having to return to where you were before to appreciate what you have. And there's a value in that. It's dangerous to return to where you were because it's easy to return to where you were and return to who you were. But assuming you have the ability to at least remember on some level that you're not the same as the person who was there before, that in and of itself is a tremendous accomplishment. Even if a person needs to work on maintaining who they are, just realizing how we're different is a tremendous thing we should be happy about. And it could be Ashereinu Matov Chalkeinu is something you can sing better when you're back in America than in yeshiva. Assuming you still remember how you're different, right? Which I assume we all will, even if it erodes a little bit. You should leave as mana, Ashereinu Matov Chalkeinu. And it's not such a simple thing. It's not a simple thing to have been in yeshiva. It's not a simple thing to have had this opportunity. It's not a simple thing to have it click, to be in yeshiva where it clicks. So you're going to meet people who've spent their year in Israel who hasn't clicked for it in the same way. I'm sure you're going to meet people like that. Hasn't clicked for it at all. Hasn't clicked for it in the same way. Maybe they learned a lot of Torah, but they didn't learn a lot of Schaira. You know, right? Saying, you know. Yisrael. Our job isn't to point out on the, you know, have this thing when people come back into yeshiva, it's almost as bad as, you know, sukkahs. I'm in the best yeshiva, I'm in the best yeshiva, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? Hopefully you've outgrown it, right? Outgrown the, you know, the insecurity and outgrown the need to make yourself feel better by convincing somebody else they made a mistake. A person who's resonated with something, a person who knows that they're in a different place, in a better place. Not just as Jewish people, not just as B'nai Torah, but the people who've succeeded at appreciating what they need to appreciate. Who've flown for 6 months, who've flown for 3 months, who've flown for 3 weeks, who've flown for 3 days, who've flown for a minute to know what that means to fly. Because once you've flown, you know what it means. And no matter what you do the rest of your life, you know what it means. And you can always tap back into it. Ashreichem. Of course, it's a responsibility. You never learned to fly. You're not expected to fly. If you've learned to fly, you're a bird, not a chicken. Chicken Run. A deep movie, The Chicken Run. Yeah, okay. You're a bird, not a chicken. You're an eagle with the flegel. To quote Hanoch Teller, right? You know. So again, too often we have these similar phrases which we just say, okay, it's the same thing. There's a difference in the adjective and there's a difference in the noun. Ma tov u'manoyim. Tov is good. It's an objective, you know, thing. It's good, lucky. Noyim, na'im, is sweet. Is something we're happy about. Is something we can taste. You know, maybe a person at a certain point understands that Torah is good. But hopefully they get to a point where they understand that Torah is sweet. And not just Torah, but our chelek in it. What we have, what we can be. So the adjective is different. And the noun is also different. Chalkenu and Goralenu are different in two ways. Chelek is an objective vacuum issue. It's a chelek. A goral is what we've received, our lot in life. We use the term our lot in life, it means what we've been ascribed. And number two, it means our destiny, it means where we're intended to go, where we're meant to go. Our lot, the word lot can mean both, no, by the way, in English. So it really does encompass both of them. And I think it means two things. We say in Karbanos, which this morning Amir Tashem will all say properly, you know, I had a chavrus in yeshiva, a little cynical guy. I wasn't such a yeshiva, but such a chavrus at a certain point. And, you know, he said to me, you know, we're talking about Shavuos, before Shavuos, and he said, you know, Sukkot has mitzvahs, Pesach has mitzvahs, Shavuos has no mitzvahs. Some people think the mitzvah is eating milchiks. I think the mitzvah is saying all of karbanos. Because, you know, people get up, you know, and they stay up till late, and so they start davening, they say all of karbanos. So we say before we begin the karbanos, Ashreinu, that's what we say. Shmashkimim erev avoker, v'omrim pamayim v'chol yom. The ability to say Ashreinu as an individual. Mi shemashkim aboker. It should be a night that we can be mashkim aboker this way, even if we're not mashkim, right? Mashkim doesn't necessarily mean getting up and going to sleep. It means reawakening. Where we can say Ashreinu matov chalkenu, not just as the Jewish people, but as a group of people who appreciate our own chelak. Each one with our strengths. Whether our strength is hasmada, whether our strength is Iyun, whether our strength is Bikiyas, whether our strength is our Midos, whether our strength is our Tzidkus, whether our strength is our ideology, each one has, whatever we have. Our passion, our smile, our goodness, whatever it is. To talk about the Chelek of the Jewish people and to talk about Chelkenu. Until we come to appreciate and be happy with the Chelek that the Kodesh Baruch Hu has given us, we are not going to be able to truly live it with simcha. To find that goodness and therefore that comfortability with the gifts that we've been given. To be able to say Ashreinu ma tov chalkenu u'manoyim goralenu as an individual who's part of a group that appreciate that what we've been given is wonderful even though what we've each been given is different. And what we've been given is a destiny and a heritage, and what we've been given is the, you know, genetic code to realize it in our way, to realize it intellectually and to realize it in life and practice. Very important to be able to say this properly, sing it properly. The other thought I remember, you know, going Ben Azmanim, Ben Azmanim is a more challenging time than yeshiva. Because yeshiva, what am I doing after yeshiva? Where am I going? I'm learning. You know what I'm saying? What's the big deal, right? The only question I need to know is, which Masechta do I finish after Davis finishes the one I'm finishing now? You know what I'm saying? That's the biggest question you face in yeshiva. Co-fix or co-fizz? You know what I'm saying? Big existential issues, you know, uranium or plutonium. You know what I'm saying? These are big issues. Person leaves yeshiva, everything hits them. What's going to be in the future? What's going to be my parnasa? What's going to be my college? What's going to be? What's going to be? And that's for sure when a person's leaving yeshiva for good, even though those words can never be said, leaving yeshiva for good, in either meaning of the word. And number two, you know, even if a person's coming back, everything starts to hit them. Well, you know, where does everything go? Where does everything go? And I remember the words, you know, the song that stuck with me the most when I used to leave yeshiva. And I think it's something you need to sing even when you're in yeshiva, but more when you leave yeshiva. Is Horeini Hashem Darkecha? Show me. Hopefully we're committed. Hopefully we're committed. We want to live our lives correctly. So we're asking Hashem to show us. Show us, because hopefully we're willing to follow. And we live in a confusing world. It is not as confusing as we want to make it out to be, by the way, but it still is. A lot of questions come up. It's hard sometimes. You have to fight through things. I don't mean fight with your parents, but sometimes you have to fight through the issue of making decisions with your parents. You have to fight all kinds of things, financial issues and personal issues, all kinds of things. Everyone has their thing. You think you have the most? Talk to someone in confidence. You think they have the least? Talk to someone in confidence. You'll see. Everyone has. And hopefully HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us if we want to help ourselves. Again, we should never ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help us with something we're not committed to helping ourselves with. There's no reason He should help us. But if we are, if we really feel that we need to be mercied on to have the mikdash, then maybe He'll have mercy on us. Rachim Hashem Elokeinu Yisrael Amecha. If we really feel that we want to live our lives that way, and we're really ready to live our lives, whatever that way is, Horeini Hashem Darkecha, the Ben Azmanim song. And you know, if you have dark times and Ben Azmanim, whatever, sing it to yourself. It'll help. It helped me. Assuming you're committed to it, you know what I'm saying? Horeini Hashem. Matzov.
Yifnei Avinu Shebashamayim Shemitem Benikar
two options. They offer Arvei Pesachim or a question and answer session. They should offer a third option just to sing the whole night. So we didn't choose that, so we have to. So 5:30, Mitzvah Shem, we'll sing more on the roof. We want to learn a little bit and get some Torah in too. And we have wonderful snacks, right? Courtesy of the Claire's. Did I get that right? Where's Kevin?